We've changed the name of the condition that soldiers bear when returning from war quite a few times. What was once battle fatigue and shell shock is now called post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. And along with the name changes, there have been changes in treatment approaches. Sometimes it appears the old remedies might in fact be the best, like getting back to nature, getting in touch with the outdoors. This is a process detailed in Stephanie Westland's book, Field Exercises, How Veterans Are Healing Themselves Through Farming and Outdoor Activities. Stephanie Westland is a holder of a PhD in Peace and Conflict Studies. She started research with veterans 5 years ago, and she joins us from Canada. Thanks for joining us, Stephanie.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeffrey.
So let's start with the Peace and Conflict Studies. What got you into the realm of working directly with veterans in the first place?
Well, while I was doing my coursework in Peace and Conflict Studies, I started to look at the context for changes in peace processes. So when adversaries sort of turned around and were able to acknowledge each other as more human rather than just enemies. And a lot of times this was happening in the outdoors. If you think about some of the processes that happened at Camp David, for example, or at the negotiations that led up to the Oslo Accord, which led to that famous handshake between Yitzhak Rabin and Yasser Arafat on the White House lawn, that happened in the countryside in Norway. And a lot of times they were spending time walking in the woods together and at the fjords and along lakes and those sorts of things. And so I was already interested in nature as a change, sort of helping the human condition before that. And then I started at the same time to hear stories about veterans who were saying, you know, I'm feeling better when I'm gardening or farming or when I'm with my horse or my dog or hiking, canoeing, fishing, even hunting, I think. And so I really wanted to look into that area because I think veterans, traditionally, they've been a bit marginalized. Often their voices aren't well heard. And so I see my role as an academic as being able to bring voice and bring more attention to issues that maybe the general population doesn't pay that much attention to.
Go ahead.
So what happened was that I had already started this research in the human nature relationship side. And I knew that there was a ton of research coming out of areas like neuroscience and epidemiology and general medicine and disciplines like that that actually supported what the veterans were saying. And so just bringing the two together was really important to me.
There's a particular name that crops up in your book and in your research, Romeo Dallaire. Who's he and why couldn't you get him out of your mind?
Well, Romeo Dallaire is actually a Canadian general, and he was the... He led the peacekeeping mission in Rwanda for the United Nations. And what happened, he has struggled, and he's been very open in Canada in terms of his struggles after that experience with post-traumatic stress and even his suicide attempts and his struggles with alcohol abuse and such. But he went back to Rwanda 10 years after the genocide, and he took a film crew with him. And what they did was there was this hillside that he said he went to visit often during his time there. And he said, you know, he was talking to his wife on the film camera at the time, and he said, you know, this is where I became human again. And so whenever he visited this hillside, he had that specific notion of humanity. And so that's why I couldn't get him out of my mind, because I think that it just really spoke to that connection between human and nature, that he could find his humanity even in these sort of depths of terrible things that were happening all around him.
Forgive me for trying to draw parallels if none exist, but it sounds like some of this is along the lines of the value of getting prisoners, for example, out of cells and into the sunshine and just into places where they can breathe the fresh air for a while.
I think that's absolutely true. There's lots of parallels there. Unfortunately, in Canada, our government a few years ago actually got rid of our prison farms. But I know that there's some really interesting programs happening in the United States with this, and they're having quite a lot of success. And there's even been studies, you know, I think in the early 80s with prisoners, and if inmates had a view of farm fields from their cell, they actually used prison healthcare services less often than those who looked onto an inner courtyard.
Really? Just so, because they could see something going on in a natural sort of environment?
Yeah, it was happening at the same time. There was another study with hospital patients who, if they had a view of trees from their hospital bed, they actually required a shorter stay. They had fewer medications and fewer complications after surgery than those patients whose windows looked onto a brick wall. So there's been some interesting work done around even just window views of nature settings.
It shouldn't come as a surprise to hear that a connection between soldiers and nature has existed off and on throughout history. I mean, for example, some of the stories you tell, though, are quite remarkable, like soldiers in World War I actually growing gardens in the trenches. Is that right?
Yeah, and the researcher who writes about that, and he has a wonderful book called Defiant Gardens. His name is Kenneth Halpend, and he actually has these pictures of soldiers in the trenches growing gardens, saying that, you know, it really allowed them to create something normal in abnormal conditions and really to envision that a future was possible. And it actually happened that soldiers in World War I were actually being treated with garden therapy if they were suffering from shell shock. And then in World War II, what we know as horticulture therapy today, and which is being used with a wide variety of mental health patients, actually came out of work in veterans hospitals.
So if it was there before, why wasn't it used consistently? Is it because of the rise of the pharmacological industry or just a combination of factors?
You know, I really don't know the answer to that, but I suspect it has something to do with that. And I think all over, certainly Europe and North America, we began to consider nature as irrelevant to our health after World War II, these areas such as medication and therapy were maybe the way to go. And I think that what's being shown with veterans today is that this pharmacological the nature approach is just really complementary to those other therapies.
Much more to talk about with Stephanie Westland. Her book is Field Exercises, How Veterans Are Healing Themselves Through Farming and Outdoor Activities. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to take part in the conversation. Back here with Stephanie Westland and you in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Stephanie Westland. She holds a PhD in Peace and Conflict Studies and has been researching soldiers and veterans getting back to nature, farming, gardening, other outdoor activities to help them get past the experiences they've had to witness in their military service. She's written a book about it called Field Exercises, How Veterans Are Healing Themselves Through Farming and Outdoor Activities. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, 800-838-3760. Join us by email at jx@jeffnet.org. So, Stephanie, let's back up to some broader issues. How small at this point is the percentage of the population that actually serves in the military?
Oh, honestly, there's if you look at overall in North America, there's about 25 million veterans and soldiers. So that a lot of those are veterans. I think about 22 million veterans or so. So I'm not sure of the actual percentage of the population. It is small, but it's still a significant number. And if you're looking at the number who are suffering from invisible injuries such as stress injuries, like we're talking about today, I've heard numbers anywhere from about 13% to up to 40% of returning soldiers from Iraq and Afghanistan are suffering from these injuries.
All right, so here again, a significant percentage of people within that population of people who serve come home with some sort of lingering effects.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just affecting the soldier or veteran themselves, but it also affects the family. And there's even been studies, I think, in Australia with the children of veterans, and they find that the suicide rate amongst those children is actually higher than amongst the general population. So we are looking at a pretty big problem. And even the suicide rate amongst soldiers in both the U.S. and Canada today, more soldiers in both countries have died by suicide than in the recent conflicts. And that's not including veterans. So I know in the United States, for example, there's suggestions that about 22 veterans per day die of suicide.
That is exactly the same number we talked about in our first hour, because we were talking about the fact that International Suicide Survivors Day is coming up on Saturday, November 22nd. So yes, the same number has been said now twice on the Jefferson Exchange today. That's a high number. That's a lot of people. And I get the picture from not only your book, but from other works as well, that part of the issue is that not only are they struggling with what they have experienced, but so few people back in society, because of the small percentage of people who serve in the military, fully understand what they're going through.
That's one of the things that I hear from veterans a lot, is that they really have difficulty connecting into the civilian community once they themselves become civilian, because they feel really misunderstood by civilians. And that leads to really a lot of social isolation, both from that feeling of misunderstood and then also as a symptom of the stress injury itself, because a lot of veterans will suffer from things such as flashbacks and panic attacks. And like, for example, a flashback, when you and I have a memory, we know that it's happening in the past, but if somebody has a flashback, it actually brings that trauma right into the present. So they can hear it, they can smell it, they bring everything back about that experience right into the immediate present. And so when those types of things are happening to you and you can't really control when these things happen, it really leads to, really, you just want to stay home a lot. Or often I've heard veterans are staying at home, you know, with their curtains closed or even in their basements, just to sort of isolate themselves and keep these symptoms from happening in public spaces.
And as we've heard from people who've done other research a little more deeply in trauma itself, you really need new experiences, and you don't get them in a dark house with the shades drawn.
Yeah, and so one of the really interesting things that I hear from veterans is that a lot of them went into the militaries because they wanted to serve their communities. And so once they become a civilian again, that desire for service doesn't go away. And so when they're doing things like farming and gardening, it really provides opportunities not only for healing in terms of the actual benefits of nature contact and effects on things like serotonin and blood pressure and cortisol, which is a stress hormone, but also these positive interactions with the community. So what's more valuable than feeding good food to somebody else and feeling basically like a valuable member of society again?
Stephanie Wentzlund's book, Field Exercises, is about farming, gardening, and other outdoor activities to help the recovery process for soldiers and veterans. You dislike the term PTSD, I notice. Why is that?
You know, that actually comes from veterans, and I agree with them, because it's the disorder part that they disagree with, because most veterans will say, you know, I think that my body and mind are reacting appropriately to the trauma and violence that I've experienced and participated in. And so for them to be labeled a disorder, they just feel that it's just inappropriate. And so a lot of veterans and even some psychologists and academics are starting to move towards classifying it as simply as an injury. And I think that's helpful, that term, because it really does, even though it's invisible to most of us, it's the person who is actually suffering is suffering quite a lot. And sorry, I'm not sure where I was going to go with that.
About PTSD and disliking the term. So the term is often, OSI, is that the term that tends to get used in Canada?
Oh yes, that's where I was going. In Canada, they've actually changed, the military has actually changed the term. So we're talking about operational stress injury as the umbrella term now to look at some of these different conditions that come out of stressful events in the military.
By a different name, is it still generally treated the same way? Are there some differences you've noticed in treatment between American and Canadian veterans organizations?
I'm honestly not an expert in terms of the treatment options, the other treatment options, but I think basically it is being treated the same way. I think that veterans just appreciate the term injury because because of the way that it portrays what's happened to them.
And so, Stephanie, are you providing programs like this for soldiers and veterans? Are you just observing? Or is there a combination thereof?
For me, I've just been really interviewing and talking to veterans who are doing this type of work. So basically, what I think is happening is there's in Europe, there's been a movement towards what's called green care for a while. So in some countries, a doctor or psychiatrist can actually prescribe a patient to work on a farm. And so these clients or patients work on the participate in the everyday work of the farm. They're doing working with private farmers. So these farmers, they're not specialists by any means, but they're participating in planting and taking care of the animals and those types of activities. And they're finding quite a lot of benefit. And so what I think veterans are doing here in North America is, first of all, they're realizing on their own that, okay, I'm feeling better when I'm doing these types of activities. And then they want to offer them to other veterans as well as a form of peer support in a way. And also they get a lot of benefit from doing these activities with other veterans in terms of developing social connections and that camaraderie that existed in the military environment. And I really think that they themselves are leading this green care movement in North America today.
It sounds like it's certainly the environment itself is important, but also the people with whom they do it. That's the basis for success in a lot of support groups, obviously, is the people who've experienced what you have experienced also.
Yeah, they find a lot of benefit from connecting with others. As I said before, when they feel misunderstood, then there's a lot of benefit in connecting with those who've actually been where they are and who understand what they're going through. And at the same time, one of the veterans in the book, for example, he talks about how it's still easier to talk about his experiences in the military with another veteran if, for example, they're both grooming a horse. Or this might extend to digging in the dirt together or something like that.
Stephanie Westland, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Field Exercises, How Veterans Are Healing Themselves Through Farming and Outdoor Activities. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the rebirth of green care for soldiers and veterans. 800-838-3760 around the region, 800-838-3760, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you point to examples way back through history where it was seen that that returning warriors needed to do things like work on farms, or chop down trees or just do something in nature. And we talked about how it seemed to get lost, certainly after World War II. Can you point to any specific event or sequence of them that seemed to rehab green care in modern times?
Honestly, I really can't. I think it's just veterans. And, maybe veterans have been individually doing this type of activity. It may be just that we've been involved in more conflict again recently. And there are groups, for example, in the United States, like the Farmer Veteran Coalition, that's been quite active in terms of helping veterans transition to a secondary career as farmer. So it might be also, I think it's just a whole bunch of things are happening all at once. And maybe even just that really a lot of this research, for example, about strains in the soil, they're bacteria strains that are producing antidepressant-like effects that trigger neurons in the brain, for example, to produce serotonin. So it's helping to regulate mood. So I think that there's just so much going on in terms of all of these areas that it's really just converging now to this point.
Interesting. So there's an antidepressant of sorts in the soil.
Yeah, and there's even been studies with people who are spending time in a garden setting, and if you compare them with people who just spend time indoors, their cortisol levels, so that's a stress hormone, were 2.5 times lower when they were in the garden. So that's significant, and that probably points to one of the benefits that veterans are finding. A lot of the studies in green care are also finding benefits like increased self-esteem and confidence and decreased anxiety, and then again that increased social connection and belonging. And so these are also benefits that a lot of veterans talk to me about.
Well, there are lots of personal stories in the book, in fact. And was it difficult at all to get vets to come forward to tell their stories?
Sometimes. I think that it's easier for me now that I have a book out, that I'm actually connecting with a lot more veterans. But the ones who participated were really willing to share their experiences because they realized how much both veterans and civilians could benefit from these types of experiences, and to help, I think, break down the stereotypes that so many of us civilians have of veterans.
So let's talk about some specific examples. And Nathan Lewis, for example, on the garden where he works near Ithaca, what's that all about?
Sure. Nathan and a group of his friends got together to create a group that's called the Veteran Sanctuary. So what they've done is it's a threefold project where they have started a community garden, as well as a writing group and a papermaking initiative. So they're actually making paper out of their combat uniforms. And but in specifically, the garden focuses on sustainable food security. And they just find that by gardening together and spending quite a bit of time outdoors, that they're really benefiting from not only cultivating really good food that would take a lot of money to buy, but also the community and camaraderie aspect of that. And so when they're able to, they provide food to the food bank or to different veterans groups in the area. And basically they invite any veterans who are coming through or who live in the Ithaca area to come and out and work with them in the garden.
Did I hear you right? You said they're making paper out of their uniforms?
Yeah, they are. So I'm not sure exactly. We didn't focus too much because the book was focused specifically more on nature connections. But yeah, they are making paper out of their combat uniforms.
So it's the fiber, it sounds like, that they're turning around there. Interesting.
I think so. And Nathan, actually, he does quite a bit of art. And so that's part of his process is especially in the winter months when there's not so much gardening happening, is both making paper and then printing on this paper.
Nathan is really clear about his feelings about the reasons for fighting, the war he got involved in. Explain those to us, would you?
Well, Nathan, he really didn't have a lot of financial or economic opportunities in his area. And so that when the recruiters came to their high school, it sort of just seemed natural for him to get involved in the military. So he talks about how well recruiters do tend to do in these types of areas. And then 9/11 happened shortly after he got involved, or after he enlisted. And so then he went over to Iraq, basically after a brief time in Kuwait. And they were collecting weapons and ammunition stockpiles throughout the time that he was there.
And he's not really thrilled about the political reasons for the war, though, I understand.
No, I think that he really just, I mean, one of the things he said to me is he didn't really feel like he was serving his country in his capacity there, but really like it was more about oil, perhaps.
And does that make a difference I guess it has to make a difference, really, in the image that he comes back with. I mean, like, I went there to do this, and then I actually did that.
Yeah, I think that's one thing. That's actually one of the quotes that I start the book with, was I talked to Tia Christopher, who herself is a U.S. Navy veteran, and at the time she was the chief of staff for the Farmer Veteran Coalition. And if you don't mind, I'll just read to you what
sure.
She had to say. She said, "In the military, we're taught to be given a task, to see to that task, and to complete that task. And it's been hard with prolonged warfare for service members to see the completion of a task, to see that through. I think there are very negative psychological consequences to that." And so it's basically, it's that idea that you never really quite get done what you think you're going to get done, and what the goal was, and maybe even don't understand fully the goal.
And there are other works in the book by writers other than yourself. For example, Meditation on Being a Baby Killer is a poem right up front in the book by Michael Parmalee, a Vietnam combat veteran. So a bunch of things that really do help you understand the mindset of the people we're talking about here. Let's take a call. We have Anne and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Stephanie Westland, the author of Field Exercises.
Thank you. I've always been an outdoor person, including 45 years of experience with horses. And I was thinking about another group that has experienced violence and long-term stress, and that's the women and children that are in domestic violence shelters from domestic violence. And I was thinking about the ramifications of those kinds of places, when possible, having a garden and the being outside It's something that even children can participate in, and also, you know, the lessons about nutrition and the experience of watching something that you've planted grow. So anyway, I was hoping that your author would also think about that aspect of outdoor therapy.
All right. Thanks for that, Anne. Appreciate it. So, Stephanie, I know you were focusing on soldiers, but did you find other people working in community gardens in a nature situation similar to what Anne is talking about as their own therapy?
I think so, and that's actually part of the reason I wrote the book. And I mean, in part, I was focusing specifically on veterans, but I find that these veteran stories are applicable really to any of us. And I think this research provides a lot of hope, particularly because of that. So in the second chapter, I actually go through a lot of the recent research that has been done. And a lot of it has happened with other populations, with children, with the elderly, with people in workplaces, as I mentioned, prison inmates and hospital patients. And so I think that there's so many of people, first responders, others suffering from trauma, and even those of us with children or those of us coping with stress that can really benefit from these types of activities. So I really appreciate Anne's comment.
Yes, thanks for that, Anne. And it's a real glimpse into our mindset that we tend to look at things very technologically. Can we fix this with a computer program? Can we fix this with medication? And in fact, just getting back to nature, which is as old as nature itself, seems to be a good way to go. Field Exercises is the book. Stephanie Westland is the author. We'll come back and take more phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest today is the author Stephanie Westland. She holds a PhD in Peace and Conflict Studies and began research with veterans 5 years ago, resulting in a book called Field Exercises, How Veterans Are Healing Themselves Through Farming and Outdoor Activities. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Our phone number here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. That's anywhere, 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We have a couple of emails here. The first from Joe in Talent, who writes, I am happy to see so much being done for our returning troops. I have two sons who served in the Middle East and have suggested they get their minds set on something productive, something that gets results to keep them from spending time alone and reliving what they went through. I'm a Viet vet, Joe writes, and things were different when I came home. Zero support, almost hostile reactions from people when I started college, and nowhere to turn for help. I do not have a green thumb, he writes. Actually, plastic plants shake when I walk by. I am so bad at it. But I did get involved in working an apple orchard in Santa Rosa as a part-time job and found it to be key in helping me reconnect friends and family. I had things to look forward to, and at the end, the reward was something I could eat and share. Being able to take part in helping something grow as opposed to trying to stay alive and kill someone goes a long way to modulate the effects of PTSD. Thanks for that email, Joe and Talent. You must have heard similar stories in the interviews you did, Stephanie.
Yeah, I really did. And what Joe is talking about, I think it goes into what Kelly Lambert, she's a neuroscientist, talks about effort-driven rewards. So not only is it connecting with nature, but it's also really seeing positive results from working with our hands. And that's something that she really talks about in her book, Lifting Depression, but I think it really ties into what veterans are talking about here. And if I can just return to what Tia Christopher had to say about that, she was with the Farmer Veteran Coalition. She said, we found that when veterans can follow a plant cycle, when they prepare the earth, they plant the seed, they nurture it, they harvest it, and they eat it or they sell it, that process in itself is healing. But I think also going back to the fact that, you know, not all veterans have a green thumb or are interested in these types of activities, there's also been veterans who are hiking the Appalachian Trail that are finding a lot of benefit from that. Or even from spending time with a dog, I think the area of service dogs, for example, is really growing for veterans. And if you've ever had a chance to maybe see a video or something of a service dog at work, if a veteran is getting anxious, for example, that dog will start, you know, pawing at them and or maybe climb up into their laps before they even realize their emotional state. And at the same time, at nighttime, a lot of veterans suffer from nightmares. And so a service dog will actually wake them up before they enter the nightmare stage of their dreams. And going back to what Anne was saying, too, about horses, there are a number of programs growing for veterans around the work with horses. And horses are a prey animal. And so there's a lot of benefit because they can really read body language really well and pick up on emotion. And so for someone who's maybe suffering from anxiety or anger, the horse will tell them that this is happening to you. And so then one of the vets in the book talks about learning to sort of what he calls leave his emotions at the gate when he's working with horses. And so he really has to calm down and when he's spending time with them, and they pick up on that and provide a lot of positive feedback.
We have an email here from Mike, no town given. He says, I'm very supportive of your program. This summer, a friend and veteran of Afghanistan asked me to join him on the Oregon Wilderness Hikes Challenge. A return to nature reactivates our senses and allows our natural instincts to direct us rather than overabundant thoughts that we must experience in our fast-paced lives. In an odd way, it seems as though the wilderness is something of a window into the unknown like war is. It has fear, joy, and uncertainty, a place to possibly see and reorganize oneself. The wilderness is one of the best therapy sessions you will ever have. That, again, from Mike, no town given. You've mentioned hikes, and in fact, one of the other pictures on the cover of the book is of people taking a rafting trip, so it doesn't have to be necessarily work in nature so much as just being around nature.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of the researchers that are working on the area between human and nature connections will really talk about how our survival as a human species depended on constant interaction with other creatures and with the earth. And most of them would say that we continue to have these deep ecological instincts rooted in our psyche. And sometimes they're, you know, we don't necessarily pay attention to it. But I think that what Mike was talking about in his email really speaks to that.
And in fact, there's a person that we meet in your book who went after a degree in ecotourism and outdoor leadership. This is Christian McEachern. I guess his story surprises me right from the get-go, because this is a guy who was functioning as a peacekeeper and still ended up coming home with OSI, operational stress injury, or PTSD, whatever term you prefer.
Yeah, and Christian McEachern, he went through the entire military side of the system trying to manage his PTSD symptoms. So he was doing medication and individual and group therapy. And it was only when he was doing his coursework towards ecotourism that there was one day he was sitting beside the river, and keep in mind this was about 8 years after he was initially diagnosed, and he realized, whoa, like suddenly I'm feeling at peace with life for a minute. And he thought, really, there's some benefit to bringing this type of programming to other veterans. And so that picture actually of veterans rafting on the front cover of the book is actually from one of the programs he created, which was the Canadian Veteran Adventure Foundation.
And so so
they were doing things like whitewater rafting as well as, but mostly very gentle activities, just keeping in mind that veterans who were suffering from these types of injuries weren't perhaps at their peak levels of physical fitness anymore.
Well, and you point out that Christian McEachern himself had some attention from the Canadian veteran system. Did it do him any good, really?
He still believes that medication and therapy have been really important to his own recovery and to managing his symptoms, but he absolutely needs something else. And this is what I think a lot of veterans would talk to you about this. And sometimes it's not even nature. Sometimes it's participating in writing groups or meditation or art or music or something like that. But I think that there is something about nature, whether it's connecting with horses or sitting by the river, that really gets, as I was talking about, to the root of the human psyche.
And back to Nathan Lewis in Ithaca, New York, and his community veterans garden. He's pretty clear about the fact that nobody's getting rich, but they do seem to be getting better.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly are basically they're not even making a living from the program. And he says, you know, if our budget is about $1,500 a year, we're lucky. But he does talk about the fact that they're able to grow high-quality organic foods for themselves, which he believes are very nourishing and important to his body in his own recovery from the trauma of war.
And there's also Penny Dex, a woman veteran, obviously, in here, an Army veteran. And what did she go through in the military? Her story is a bit more convoluted than some of the others.
Yeah, she actually didn't serve overseas, but she was a victim of military sexual trauma. And the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs actually estimates that as many as 20 to 30% of female soldiers have experienced some form of military sexual trauma, which ranges from sexual harassment to assault and rape. And so because she never served overseas, she kind of felt, you know, I'm not a hero and I'm not really a veteran. And so it was a long process for her to even realize that she was a veteran. And then she and a group of other veterans were running this program called Boots to Roots, where actually they had initially heard about the Veterans Sanctuary in Ithaca, and they wanted to create something similar in and around Portland.
And that's our Portland, Oregon. And so she did meet Nathan Lewis and see his operation, is that right?
She didn't meet with him. She just was, I mean, he's way across the country. So mm-hmm. I think a lot of veterans are able to connect through Facebook and find out about what others are doing. And so I think that was sort of how it happened. And they ended up running a program, a permaculture program for veterans in the summer of 2012 to learn more about permaculture. And at the same time, they worked on a veteran-owned farm to transform his operations into a permaculture garden and a keyhole garden and things like that.
And these are the Doug Fir veterans, is that what she calls the group?
Yeah, so they've now transitioned to being the Doug Fir veterans, which they sort of realized as they were going through this process that they weren't actually able to offer so much a treatment program, I suppose, mm-hmm. for other veterans. But really, they were just a big group of friends that needed to support one another and help one another get through whatever they were going through. So if this is staying up till the middle of the night talking about issues, that's fine. Or spending time outdoors together, that's fine too. But rather than their initial hope was to offer a third alternative for veterans, I think they've sort of stepped back from that for the time being.
So there's certainly some evolution and change going on here that they're finding out, let's try this. Okay, that didn't work necessarily that well, so let's try this instead. But definitely continuing to stay at it and continue to work for their own recovery and that of everybody else around them.
Yeah, and I think one of the problems that veterans will talk about is something they run into a lot, is the fact that a lot of funders will say, well, you know, there's no proof or there's no research on this, so we're not going to give you any funding. And that's something that, for me, sort of makes me frustrated and gets my back up, because when there are thousands of voices of veterans across North America and even in Europe saying this, to me, that's data. That means that something is happening and something is working. And so that's really part of the reason I ended up writing the book, was to respond to critics who say there's no research or there's only anecdotal evidence, because there's actually quite a bit of research.
Well, given the situation, then, I is there any particular receptivity working within the VA in the United States and its Canadian counterpart?
I think it's starting to shift. In the latest journal, it's an academic journal published by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, but anyone can go look at it. There's actually a research study about veterans who are doing multi-day camping and hiking trips and the benefits that that's having. And the Canadian government recently provided a bit of funding to one of the groups that I document in the book that's doing equine-assisted learning with veterans. So I think there is a slow shift happening, and maybe even at the state level. I know one of the veterans, Destin Denniston, talks about how his state VA is more receptive to this type of programming than the larger federal VA system.
I did get up to Destin Denniston's story, Vets Cafe. What does he do there?
Well, Destin's been similarly to Boots to Roots, is they were working on permaculture programs and basically just trying to help veterans get experience to do work in agriculture, and So he was running programs that would where veterans were able to get credit through the local university, while at the same time doing hands-on activities in permaculture and things like that.
Given that you've been researching this for about 5 years now, I wonder if you've had a chance to reconnect with some of the people that you met when you very first started this to see how different they might be from the way they were when you first met them.
Yeah, I think that's actually some of the stories, for example, do chronicle. It's not maybe not obvious to the reader, but they do look at, for example, when I first met Christian McEachern, he was doing the Canadian Veteran Adventure Foundation, and then they ran out of funding. But then he's moved towards working with horses, and he's now running an equine first aid program where he's offering, teaching others equine first aid, basically. And I basically, for the most part, I've kept in touch with a lot of the veterans in the book, and I see that definitely things are evolving and changing for them. So it's not all the same as at the beginning, but all of them are continuing to work and to find benefit and relief through these types of activities.
And the stuff that works, I have to believe it would be just as different as each individual, that, you know, for one person, hiking might be great, for another person, working in the farm might be great, for a third person, working with horses or something, but it is probably as different as the individuals themselves.
I think so, and I think it even depends on their triggers of their stress symptoms. So I did hear a story while I was working on the book about one veteran who was triggered by the smell of dirt, and so he would get flashbacks from that. So I think farming or gardening probably wouldn't work for him, but maybe, you know, spending time with a dog might be really beneficial.
And is the research going to continue? Are you going to keep doing what you're doing with this?
I'm hoping to. I actually just had a baby recently, and so I'm taking a little bit of a breather, but hopefully soon I'll get back to it.
I thought I heard a baby crying in the background. Well, thanks for taking some time away from the baby today. The book is called Field Exercises. Stephanie Westland wrote it and joined us on The Exchange today. Stephanie, thank you.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Jeffrey.
You bet. Take care.